From WKAR at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports with Al Martin.
Johnny Peralta lines one to right field for a base hit.
Miguel Cabrera, game-winning walk-off home run.
The champagne is flowing in the Tigers clubhouse.
I would have never, ever thought that I would have been in the Michigan Hall of Fame as a kid when I first picked up a basketball on 512 Gray Street in Flint, Michigan.
Thomas drives from the left side, goes up and banks it in. Jasmine Thomas.
Just the joy you get from watching it, like a JV wrestler. Getting his first match ever. That makes it worthwhile as a coach.
It's a fake. Bates is going to throw.
Good afternoon, beautiful people. It's Tuesday, June 18th, 2013, and I hope you all are having a great start to this third week of the month. Current Sports is back in your ear with another captivating show in store for you all, including a Tiger who is making history one pitch at a time, doing something that only one other Tiger has done in franchise history. And we finally get a convincing win in the Stanley Cup Finals last night, and a few radio hosts in Atlanta do some pretty idiotic things. All right, just wait till you hear this one, guys. We'll update you on all of that and continue to tackle a topic that's steadily getting more and more attention as time moves on. Guess what? Current Sports is on your radio and starts right now. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. And hey, you ever listen to Current Sports and say to yourself, that brother is just plain wrong? Or you may have a question on your mind. Well, I tell you what, you can be a part of the hands-on discussion each and every day. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin, WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports. Or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. If you got a question or want to weigh in on anything we talk about on the show, hit me up on any three of those platforms and we'll talk about it. We want to hear what's on your mind. All right. Well, for all of you who tuned into yesterday's edition of Current Sports, you know that this week we are discussing a topic that's pretty touchy and one that is continuing to take prominent importance as time moves on. Homosexuality in the world of sports is that topic, and we kicked off the discussion yesterday with Don Hubbard. Now, Don was once a track and field athlete for Eastern Michigan University and announced that he was gay in 1978, right before he graduated from EMU. He had participated in the Vancouver Gay Games, in which he won the gold. Now, Don is also co-founder of the Rainbow League Bowling Squad out in Ann Arbor, which is approaching its 21st season. Now, one interesting part of our discussion was when Don let me know that he was, in fact, HIV positive. Now, Don, for you, when you got the news, I mean, when you listened to that Magic Johnson bite, that was a moment where, you know, he had to go in front of the public and let everyone know that he was retiring because he had acquired the HIV virus. Don, when you got the news that you had acquired, that you were positive, just take us through that moment and what was going through your head during that moment.
Well, I got tested. No reason. I just went and got tested, and the guy told me, he said, you're positive. And you're talking like, at that point, it was 87, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really did seem like a death sentence, but, you know, I don't try to get caught up in the negative, you know. I'm always active. I'm always trying to inspire other people, and I just things that keep me going and positive. And
mm-hmm.
So it just never got me down. And with Magic Johnson, when I heard that, I personally didn't understand why he felt he needed to quit playing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe back then people were a little more leery of it, but that was his choice. But you can still do everything if you are positive. You just have to do the right things. I do it real quick. I always say it's a team event. I'm teamwork. Eat right, cut the stress, do some exercise. If you smoke, quit. Take your meds. You know, if you do all the right things,
right.
You know, again, I've been on meds for 25 years. I am now having my best counts ever, basically normal.
Yes, that was Don Hubbard yesterday, our first guest when we talk about this topic of homosexuality in the world of sports. Don was once a track and field athlete for EMU, announced he was gay in 1978, co-founder of the Rainbow League Bowling Squad, and, yes, was diagnosed, was found out to be HIV positive. He found out later on in life. What a conversation that was. And today we continue our discussion of homosexuality in the world of sports. Of course, two of the biggest reasons why we decided to tackle this topic here at Current Sports had to do with the fact that recently two active American sports figures have come out and announced that they are gay, resulting in resounding support from everywhere. Now, those two athletes are NBA player Jason Collins and Major League Soccer player Robbie Rogers. Now, on today's show, we invite another special guest to discuss this topic with me, Rob Copeland. He's a member of Master Swimming, which is a national membership nonprofit org that allows anyone 18 or older to swim or compete in swimming. And he's also a member of the Ann Arbor Queer Aquatic Team here in Michigan, which has been going on for 21 years. Rob, welcome to Current Sports.
Thank you, Al. And it's Copeland, not Copeland.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. No problem.
Gotcha. Well, Rob, first of all, talk about when you officially came out as gay first. How tough was that for you?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how official it was. And I want to say, too, that coming out is a continual process. I mean, like, you know, it's still an ongoing. Yes, I am openly gay and have been for many years. And, in fact, most of my life at this point. But it's something you still have to do every day for the people who don't know. Like, for example, the Masters team that I swim with and that I also coach, I don't make a big announcement at the beginning of every practice that I'm gay. And so there are new people who join the team all the time, and they may not know until unless it just happens to come up in natural conversation. So again, in some way, shape, or form, I'm coming out on a regular basis. But to really answer your question, I came out officially, I guess, in 1976. I was a senior in college and on the swimming team.
Mm-hmm.
And started telling people. So I guess that's what I would consider the official beginning.
Now, Rob, it's funny you bring that up because that's something I wanted to dig into in this conversation. When you say, when you're organizing or the head of the master swimming team and you're running these classes and kids come in or people come in and do this and engage in the master swimming thing, you're not coming out and saying, hey, you know, and you're not making a big announcement, hey, I'm gay. But when it comes to the world of sports, as you see guys like Jason Collins and Robbie Rogers, who have come out, they've come out and publicly announced it. And there are some out there who believe in the whole don't ask, don't tell philosophy. Do you agree with that at all? And if not, why is it important for gay or lesbian athletes to come out like Collins and Rogers?
Oh, I 100% disagree with don't ask, don't tell. I disagreed with it with the military, and I certainly disagree with it. In general, people need to be who they are and feel comfortable doing that. It's a personal choice, and you know, we don't ask heterosexual people to hide who they love, to hide how they spend time with the person that they love, and why should gay people be any different? And so, you know, as far as gay athletes are concerned, I think it would send. I think what Jason and Robbie did is incredible, and I think it's going to have a tremendous positive impact on other professional athletes as well as young people who. You know, you're probably aware a couple of years ago of the rash of gay teen suicides due to, young people not being able to deal with, coming out issues and the whole It Gets Better campaign. And,
right.
So I think it's going to be a tremendous help to young people.
Ladies and gentlemen.
To have positive role models. Because in 1976, I didn't have any.
Right.
You know, there was no Will and Grace on TV.
Right.
Or other television characters, you know, that portrayed gay people at all, let alone in a positive manner. So,
ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Rob Copeland. He's a member of the Master Swimming Squad and also a member of the Ann Arbor Queer Aquatic Team here in Michigan, which has been going on for 21 years. Now, Rob, I got to ask you this. When you see, you know, guys like Jason Collins and Robbie Rogers coming out, what does that do for the world of sports and even today's general culture?
I think it does two things, and to answer both parts of that question, I think that it will continue to mystify the world of sports, or trying to think of the correct word here, but it's, you know, for so long we thought of sports as just a male heterosexual thing, and only in the last, you know, 30, 40 years has it been more open to women, for example.
Right.
And more accepted. And so likewise, it's never been a comfortable place for gay people to be open. I think that's changing, and people like Jason and Robbie are helping that.
Right. Definitely. Now back in the late 70s and 80s, as we just played a bite of my conversation with Don Hubbard yesterday. Now, back in the 70s and 80s, not much was known about HIV and AIDS, many dubbing it as a quote-unquote gay disease. It wasn't really until, you know, people like, you know, Magic Johnson and his HIV announcement that people started to open their eyes and say, hey, this isn't just a gay thing. After coming out, did you ever receive any of that chatter when it came to you being gay and being in relation to the AIDS phenomena?
Very little of that, actually. I mean, there is a lot of ignorance still today that surrounds it. But as far as it being labeled a gay disease, I didn't hear very much of that. In fact, the only backlash I sort of heard was, or it was a concern more than a backlash. I came out to my family in the late 70s, and I guess officially made an announcement, something they always knew, of course, in 1980, and then AIDS or HIV started to surface in 1981. As far as, you know, people knowing something about it and not knowing anything about it and fearing it. And so my mother's big concern was that being gay, I was going to get it. So that was really the only person that, you know, I sort of got that sort of, I don't want to use the word ignorance, but, you know, ignorance not being a word related to brain power, ignorance meaning you just don't know.
Right, right. Now, Rob, for you, what was the toughest part about coming out?
The toughest part, was coming out to my family. I knew that, for the most part, they would be accepting. I kind of knew way back then that my brother probably wasn't going to be.
Right.
And I was right. I my parents and my sister were very accepting, except that my concern was that I was going to disappoint. And you know, parents want the best for their children, and so I think my parents' big concern was they were afraid I wasn't going to be happy, and I think any parent would choose for their child the road less difficult, and so I think that was an issue for my parents as well. So I knew that part was going to be tough, and I knew my brother just wasn't going to be accepting back then. But I want to say today, he has moved and progressed faster than the country has, and he's, you know, I couldn't ask for anything more from a big brother. He's grown up to be the person, a wonderful person, and very accepting. So, so I'm proud of who he's grown up to be. But that was tough.
Gotcha.
But that was very tough for me. We had a very long period where we, you know, didn't really speak, and so that was the toughest part, actually.
So you got, there was a period when you guys didn't speak. How long did that last?
We sort of progressed in intervals. We went through a period of not speaking at all. Then we went through a period of being civil if we happened to be visiting our parents, and one of us answered the phone, the other would at least be polite, you know. And then it got to the point where we would converse a little, like, how are you doing? And but as far as hanging out, spending time together, and particularly with his family, that just didn't happen. Probably for almost 20 years.
Wow, 20 years.
Right.
Wow.
Ladies, actually, over 20 years.
Over 20 years. So when you guys, you said this relationship between you guys is now, you know, to a point where, you know, it's great between you guys. I mean, did he give a reason?
I can actually say we're friends now. So
we bonded
through time and aging parents.
did he give you a reason of why there was no communication for those 20 years once you guys rekindled?
We never really discussed it. All I can say is that he has just moved and progressed as best he can, and has done a marvelous job of it. I think back then, and you know, I can't fault him for this. He was similar to most of the country, which is they thought it was a choice, and it's not a choice. I mean, maybe for some people, how you live your life is a choice, but who you're attracted to isn't. And I just like Lady Gaga sings, I was born this way. I know I was. And but back then, he thought I was making a choice, and he thought it was a bad choice.
Ladies and gents, we're talking
and it wasn't from any religious perspective. He's not terribly religious at all, so it didn't come from that, you know, mentality.
Right.
He just thought it was a bad choice. And like my parents, I think he would rather have had a straight brother. You know?
Right, right. Rob Copeland, a member of the Master Swimming Team, which is a national membership nonprofit org that allows anyone 18 or older to swim or compete in swimming. He's also a member of the Ann Arbor Queer Aquatic Team here in Michigan, which has been going on for 21 years. Now, Rob, there are many out there who believe that there will never be an athlete in the game of football to come out and profess that they are gay, simply because football is a sport of, as we all know, is a sport that prides itself on the whole persona of being the alpha male, tough guy role, which being gay, frankly, does not have the perception of being. Now, do you think that anyone in the world of football will ever announce in the future soon that they are gay? Or ever?
First of all, I can tell you right now, there are gay football players probably on every football team in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously none have come out. So do I think that's going to happen? Yes, and I think we can credit Jason and Robbie for doing that. And speaking of Jason Collins, I have to say too, I'm a huge San Antonio Spurs fan, so I just want to say, in light of a nice game, go Spurs, go.
Gotcha. You're rooting for the Spurs to close this thing out, huh?
I am wearing my Spurs T-shirt as we speak.
Now, we're definitely going to dive into that topic later on in the show.
I do think a football player is going to come out in the not too distant future, or football players, because they do exist.
And
I think that will also help further the attitudes of the country who hasn't caught up yet.
So you do think someone in the game of football will come out and profess this? I mean, like I said, when you look at football, Rob, it's a, you know, a toughy type guy, you know, sport. And it's really, do you think there's some fear about coming out when it comes to the game of football and some of the players involved in it?
I'm sure there is, but, you know, it's no different than, I don't know what makes football any tougher than basketball or soccer. I mean, you know. So I really do feel that Jason Collins and Robbie Rogers have paved the way, and I think they will have made it easier for whomever the football player is to come out first. They just made it easier for that person.
Rob Copeland, member of Masters Swimming, and also a member of the Ann Arbor Queer Aquatic Team here in Michigan. Rob, where does your love for swimming begin?
That's at a very early age. I was literally thrown into a swimming pool at 3 years old.
Right.
I
was too, almost drowned, though. That's a different story. Go ahead.
Well, actually, it was part of our kindergarten curriculum, really. And everybody was tossed into the deep end of the pool one by one, and we were told to swim to the teacher, and she started moving backwards.
Wow.
And that's how I learned to swim. And I have ever since.
You just got thrown into the pool, and you just learned just like that.
Right, and then you couldn't keep me out of the water. So,
So all of you kids were just thrown into the pool at 3 years old and told to swim. That's how you get all you guys learned. Nobody was drowning at that time.
Not that I recall.
Well, that's the exact opposite with me. I was thrown into the pool, and that's another story. But man, I still can't swim to this day. But all right.
Well, then come swim with us, and I'll coach you and give you some stroke instruction.
There we go. I need it, man. All right, Rob. So let's talk about Ann Arbor Queer Aquatics. What is it? How did it begin?
Actually, I am one of the co-founders. I hope this doesn't mimic yesterday's show with Don Hubbard. But what happened was I was living in Texas at the time, and I had met somebody, my previous partner, at a gay swim meet in Washington, D.C., and we were dating long distance. And so I agreed to move to Ann Arbor, which was a very tough decision, but I'm glad I did. And, but I said, you know, there's a stipulation that, even though I'm a San Antonio Spurs fan, and from there I was living in Dallas at the time, and Dallas had a gay swim team and a regular Masters team, and I swam for both, just like I do here in Ann Arbor. And I said, you need to get we need to get a gay swim team started before I move. So the two of us and, Kelly, and then some other gentleman. Kelly's the person on our contact page, the person I think you originally contacted.
Yeah.
And we put our brains together and sat down and figured out how are we going to do this. And we started talking to one of the pool managers at the time. He said, sure, you know, you can rent the pool for this amount of time. And that's how it began. But that was, we're about to come up on our, complete our 21st anniversary and begin our 22nd year. So.
Wow. Now, leagues like this, Rob, does it, because I was talking to Don about this yesterday as well, because, of course, he was the co-founder of the Rainbow League, which is also in Ann Arbor. Leagues like this, does it make one feel more comfortable about their sexuality, participating in something like this? Talk about that aspect to it.
Actually, that's exactly what the swim team did and has done. It became a community center of sorts for people, especially, you got to remember, this was 1991, 1992. People, you know, back then people were still struggling, and as people still do today, but hopefully less so, with their coming to grips with their sexual orientation and struggling with, you know, depending on the background they were raised in, you know, how comfortable they are. This gave people who were making that transition a safe haven for being with, around other people, if not like themselves, because we don't discriminate based on sexual orientation. So I, a lot of the straight people that I swim with during the week also swim with us at Aqua as well.
Right.
And but we all, you know, the people who maybe aren't as out or as comfortable know that those people who may be heterosexual in orientation, they, you know, they feel comfortable. They know they don't care. So it's a very accepting, comfortable place to be. And I can say, too, that now that it's 2013, is there as much of a need for having gay sports? Hopefully not. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But back then, it was very necessary, and it still today serves as a place for people to connect. And so it's more than just a place to come swim, but the same is true of Master Swimming in general. It's a unique organization that emphasizes competition as well as cooperation and not just competition. I mean, it's just it's for people to... we have all ability levels. We have former college swimmers like myself. We have in the middle of the pool, we have triathletes, people who are actively athletic but want to, but swimming wasn't their first sport, running or biking may have been.
Right.
And then we have lengths of people that are literally learning kind of not how to swim. I mean, you do have to be able to swim a minimal amount of yardage on your own you know, first. But, you know, people who are getting used to swimming and learning better stroke technique or whatever, but it also serves as a community, a social haven, a networking.
Right. So, Rob, I mean, you being the co-founder of this, the Ann Arbor Queer Aquatics, I mean, what do you hope one gets out of being a part of this league?
A sense of belonging and acceptance.
Gotcha. That's very well put. Very well put, man. So do you think there, now right now, giving you this platform to anyone out there listening, active athletes out there listening who are afraid, first of all, do you think there are active athletes out there right now who are afraid of coming out? And what advice would you give to them right now if they're out there listening?
I'm sure that there are, and they have to, and as far as giving them advice, I mean, coming out's a personal choice. It depends on the community they live in. You know, I'm very fortunate to live in a place like Ann Arbor. I was very fortunate to live in two big cities in Texas, San Antonio and Dallas. You know, I think it would be very, for an athlete that lives in a small rural town, I don't want to make stereotypes and judgments about small rural towns, but chances are they may not feel as comfortable if there's not as much of a accepting community. So it's, I guess it would depend, I mean, I would hope, in answer to your question, that athletes that are out there listening, if especially professional athletes, I think they can make a world of difference. I hope they would do it to help other people, to help other professional athletes, and most importantly, to help young people.
Right. There you have it. Rob Copeland, a member of the Masters Swimming, it was a national membership nonprofit org that allows anyone 18 or older to swim or compete in swimming. Also a member of the Ann Arbor Queer Aquatic Team. He is the co-founder there here in Michigan. It's been going on for 21 years. Rob, thanks so much for engaging this touchy topic right here on Current Sports, man.
Oh, my pleasure. And I know I don't want to jump topics here, but I know tomorrow you're going to be discussing locker room. You know,
yeah.
It should be a non-issue. It is a non-issue. Because I swim as well as coach. I, you know, swim with the same people that I coach. We share a locker room. We shower together. Not together, but
right. No, yeah.
You know, and it's just a non-issue. In fact, I go out of my way not to look at them. I probably look at them less than they look at other people. You know?
Right, right.
It's a non-issue.
Like I said, we're definitely going to be discussing that on Barbershop Wednesday. That's another very touchy topic that that many right. people have an opinion on. But, hey, Rob, thanks a lot, man. You're welcome anytime to talk about this, all right?
Well, great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. There you have it. Rob Copeland, ladies and gentlemen. Well, when we return to current sports, we will dive into our current sports section of the show. I want to let you know we'll be taking your calls at 140. Don't hesitate to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Let us hear your thoughts on any of today's topics, including the discussion we just had with Rob Copeland about homosexuality in sports. We want to hear what's on your mind. Stay tuned. More current sports is next.
I used to be a Rolling Stone.
On Talk of the Nation, we talk about what you're talking about.
I turned on the radio and I heard this and I nearly drove off the freeway.
I have experienced a lot of what you've been talking about.
I'm Neil Conan. Surprising voices, interesting conversations on the topics you're talking about. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
I'm WKAR's Mark Bayshore. 7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat. From government to the arts, sports to education, from business to travel, it's all got a home. It's Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 FM and at noon on AM 870 WKAR.
Sagan to lead over to Chara. First penalty is over. Hustling back in is Bowler. Threw one across. Shot. Score!
Hey, good people. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports. Giving you all of the sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. We want to remind you all that we'll be taking your calls at 140-517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. We want to hear what's on your mind. We just wrapped up a conversation with Rob Copeland. Again, this week we're tackling the topic of homosexuality in the world of sports. Rob is a member of the Master Swim Team, which is very prevalent in Michigan. He's also the co-founder of the Ann Arbor Queer Aquatic Team, which he co-founded 21 years ago. Just discussing, as of recently with Jason Collins and Robbie Rogers both coming out as gay and, how that is changing the culture of not only the culture we live in, but the world of sports. So if you got any comments, just give us a call and we'll talk about it and let your voice be heard. All right, let's dive into today's topics. Just before we get into the Tigers, with Max Scherzer, who was unbelievable. Also want to note, breaking news that the Red Wings have given Pavel Datsyuk a 3-year extension worth $22.5 million. Now, that extends him through the 2016-2017 season. And he's also released a tweet just thanking Detroit. He's glad to be a Red Wing for 4 more years. So congrats to Red Wing Nation as Pavel Datsyuk gets signed for an additional 3 years. All right, the Detroit Tigers. They beat the Baltimore Orioles last night 5-1 and take a 1-0 series lead. But the real story to this one, guys, was Max Scherzer. He became the first Tiger to start the season with a 10-0 record in more than 100 years. Yeah, let that sink in your brain a little bit. I'm going to say it one more time. Max Scherzer becomes the first Tiger to start the season 10-0 in more than 100 years. Only one other Tiger has done it, and it was way back in 1909, George Mullin. Yes, the workhorse, George Mullen. Anyone who knows Tigers history knows that Mullen is renowned for a for being as the one of the workhorses of the Detroit Tigers. But Scherzer pitched 6 innings, had 10 strikeouts, the 15th time in his career that he recorded 10 strikeouts or more in a single game. Now, going back to George Mullen, Mullen holds the team records for the Tigers. Most innings in a season with 382 and one-third innings. And that was set back in 1904. And most innings in a career. George Mullen has played the most innings in Detroit Tigers history with 3,394 innings under his belt. So for Max Scherzer to be in that company, like I said, the first Tiger to start the season 10-0 since 1909 with George, I mean, that's unbelievable. Now, one intriguing part to this game was really when the Tigers were being threatened in the fifth inning. Bases loaded, 2 outs. Chris Davis, yes, Chris Davis, who's been fantastic all season, a stud. He came to the plate. Davis had he had the hot bat for Baltimore all night for him. He actually hit a home run in the second inning and singled in the fourth. Rain was falling. It was an epic moment, guys. I was sitting there watching this like, wow, you know. Fifth inning, like I said, rain falling. You're going against Chris Davis, bases loaded. And on a 3-2 count, Scherzer struck him out. It was a pretty cool moment. And Max, that was a really cool moment because, like I said, the game really weighing on that. And Scherzer delivering. He's been delivering all season. I can safely say this now. Max Scherzer is the best pitcher on the Detroit Tigers. And I never thought I'd be saying that with a guy named Justin Verlander on that squad. But, man, listen to Scherzer after the game.
You know, it's really nice. You know, when you start realizing the history of this organization, to be 10-0, I mean, it's great. But at the same time, win-loss, you know, it's kind of a fluky stat. You know, sometimes when you play with a good offensive team, you can run into these type of streaks. You know, the reason I'm pitching well isn't because I'm 10-0, it's because of all the other things I'm doing. You know, I'm inducing, you know, cookouts, pitching deep into games, you know, generating strikeouts, minimizing walks, doing all the little things it takes to be a good pitcher. So that's what I hang my head on, of being a good pitcher, is all the other things that go into pitching, not being 10-0.
Yes, Scherzer was, he was unbelievable. Now, Scherzer recorded, he has recorded 6 or more strikeouts in 14 straight games to start the season. The only other pitcher to do that? Pedro Martinez. That's right. Pedro did it 3 times, but man, Scherzer is really putting his name into some pretty heavy company. Now, as Scherzer just said, you got to give a lot of credit to the offense that he's been given during his starts. There's no question he's playing with a great offense, been a factor in his amazing start. He came into the game, actually, with the best run support of any pitcher in the major league statistically. So you can't blame that. The Tigers' bats are hot when Scherzer hits the mound. And Scherzer is delivering. And that's not to take away anything from Max Scherzer. Like I said, this run that he's on is really incredible, man. And just to watch the Tigers right now, I think they're the most entertaining team in baseball to watch. I mean, they have just superstars galore on that team. You can make an argument that they have the most superstars or the most efficient players in the major leagues right now. I mean, you guys got, like, Torii Hunter, and the starting pitchers have been unbelievable. Miguel Cabrera. I mean, I could go on and on. And, man, the Tigers are really, really fun to watch. So, Max Scherzer, congrats to him. Also want to know, Chris Davis, he hit his major league leading 24th homer in the second, as I just noted. And Miguel Cabrera also had a 2-run homer early in the second that was just bananas. It was a pop-up, carried all the way out to right center field. Unbelievable. Just another day at the office for Miguel Cabrera. Also, Detroit put right-handed pitcher Anibal Sanchez. His shoulder's been bothering him. And Alex Avila, whose left forearm is not well. The Tigers have put both of those guys on the 15-day disabled list. Recalled outfielder Avisail Garcia and Brian Holiday from the AAA Toledo squad to take their roster spots. So the Tigers plan to call up left-handed pitcher Jose Alvarez to start in place of Sanchez on Thursday at home against the Boston Red Sox. All right, Lynn Birney. On Friday, the Lions legend, Lynn Birney, he sat on a panel at the Sound Mind, Sound Body football camp and talked about how football was a quote-unquote, was quote-unquote deadly and it will be gone. That's right. Lynn Birney said football will be gone in 10 to 20 years. He said his wishes had He wishes he had chosen another profession, and he told his grandson actually not to play the game because it was unsafe. Can you believe that? Lynn Barney saying this, guys. So he's had comments like this in the past, but these remarks really took a lot of heat because, I mean, they were in front of a panel of football coaches. Of course, these guys make their living in the game. They really feel a little unsettled when Lim said this. So, Lim Barney, he has kind of, he has come out and made an apology. And he says, the other day at Sound Mind and Body Camp, I was asked my thoughts on football and safety. While I made comments I believe to be truthful, it is apparent to me now that the camp was not the forum for those comments. There are the same comments I made for years before Congress, under oath, and at numerous events for retired players, and it's become second nature. So Lim Barney is not taking away what he said, the message, but he feels as though maybe that message was not suited for that type of crowd, which he's right. So, of course, Lim Barney's comments are, when you analyze these comments and he says, first of all, I don't agree with him that football is not going to be gone in 10 to 20 years. Football runs the world when it comes to sports. And I definitely have to disagree with him on that. But as far as the growing knowledge that we're starting to gain with concussions, it's really one of those topics that, you know, a lot of parents, if you talk to a lot of parents, you know, they're not even, they won't allow their son or you know, to play football or engage in football anymore because of the growing knowledge with that we have with concussions. Now, we did a segment here on Current Sports earlier a few weeks ago on concussions in sports and talked about, you know, the innovations that are being made with the helmets and, you know, the knowledge that, you know, is trying to be spread at the youth football level as far as how to hit someone goes and all that kind of stuff. So those innovations are being made to kind of, you know, pad the whole concussion discussion. But, you know, there are parents out there who see what has happened to former NFL players, and they simply don't want their child to play it. So I can't blame them on that. But popularity is not going to die when it comes to football. Football runs the world, like I said, man. There's so much money involved with it. I mean, just look at the Super Bowl. And also, if you look at, you know, inner city kids in urban areas, I mean, it's cheap to play. All you need is a pig skin and you need a field. That's it, man. So it doesn't take money to play, and kids still love the sport. So Lim Barney, you know, I'm kind of agreeing with Lim Barney's comments. On the other half, I don't. So interesting stuff, though. All right, Michigan basketball promotions, guys. Wolverines coach John Beilein promoted former video coordinator Pete Caller to Michigan's director of basketball operations and bumped up former team captain and administrative specialist C.J. Lee to the program's director of program personnel. So Caller replaces the recently departed Travis Conlin as Michigan's director of basketball operations. Now, excuse me, Conlin. Conlin left his post earlier this month to pursue a career in coaching. So Lee is a former Michigan walk-on. He played 67 games in his two-year Wolverine career, was eventually given a scholarship by Beilein and named co-captain during the 08-09 season. So Michigan's video coordinator for the past 3 years, Caller has also had administrative stops in Ohio and Bryant University. So congrats to those two guys, Pete Caller and C.J. Lee. So, all right, NHL playoffs, guys. NHL playoffs. The Boston Bruins beat the Chicago Blackhawks last night in a 2-0 shutout win. The Bruins now take a 2-1 series lead over the Blackhawks. The first two games, of course, went into thrilling overtimes, making this the first game of the series in which really there's been a convincing victory. And Tuukka Rask, he just has been unbelievable. He shut out the Blackhawks. 28 saves for him. Man, he's been great. Probably the best goalie in the playoffs all year so far. Corey Crawford made 33 saves for the Blackhawks. Now, the two goals were by Daniel Paille, both second period goals, and Patrice Bergeron. So 2-0 win. And, you know, also want to note that Bruins defenseman Dino Chara and Chicago forward Marian Hossa, they both left the ice after warm-ups. So I don't know what's going on with them, but they did leave the ice during warm-ups. Game 4, Wednesday night in Boston. We'll see if they can rebound, man. This series so far, if you look at those first two games, really exciting, going to overtime. Now, you know, you look at Boston now trying to get that upper hand, you know, and they did. I mean, they did it convincingly, too. It's really hard to get a puck past Tuukka. He's been unbelievable. So the Bruins are attempting to win a cup for the second time in three seasons, for the third time in their franchise history. So now the Bruins have now, they've won their seventh straight home playoff game. The Blackhawks, they now fall to 3-5 on the road in the postseason. So also want to note that it's been a lot of Spartan presence when you look at the Blackhawks and the Bruins, because in addition to former Spartan defenseman Duncan Keith, who of course plays for Chicago, and Torrey Krug with Boston, former Spartan Craig Simpson is also the color commentator I saw on TV the other day. And former Spartan Wes McCauley is actually one of the referees in this Stanley Cup Finals. So a lot of green and white in these Stanley Cup Finals, which will give you more incentive to watch. Fun stuff. All right, guys, a really just idiotic, stupid, just how could you do this story has just broke. And I don't know if many of you guys have heard this. I heard about it this morning on Mike and Mike. But the cast of an Atlanta sports radio show has been fired after mocking a former NFL player who has Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, the show Mayhem in the AM was broadcast on 790 The Zone on Monday morning. And in a statement, general manager Rick Mack said the station regrets comments made about former New Orleans Saints safety Steve Gleason. Now, the 36-year-old Steve suffers. He suffers from amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and which he was diagnosed with in 2011. So, in short, ALS. Now, ALS patients lose the ability to speak and move, which actually happened to Steve. And, man, it's a really tough situation for him. He was a really solid player when he played for the Saints, but now he's losing that ability to speak and move. He's actually in a wheelchair now. And so this radio show decided to poke fun at Steve. Just listen to this, guys.
Of course, ALS,
yes.
Special teams guy for the Saints,
yes.
Right in the middle of all that controversy, Peter King does a story.
No, he gives him the whole Monday morning quarterback.
In the entire, it's Steve Gleason basically gives you Monday morning quarterback. He goes on to explain his diagnosis, what he needed to do, how at 20 words per minute.
He can't speak.
Through technology, no, he actually,
with his eyes.
Yes, eye, yeah.
Is he doing like a media tour?
I'm not really sure. I know he did this.
Is that right? Joining us right now, Steve Gleason on Sports Radio 790, The Zone. Steve, congratulations on the Peter King piece.
Hello, Steve. How's Nola?
Nola's great. We had a great Father's Day yesterday. I appreciate you asking. Are you listening in New Orleans?
I am. Yeah. Chris, how was the Jersey Shore?
Yeah, like I said, that's the cast of Atlanta Sports radio show, Mayhem in the AM, broadcast on 7090 The Zone. That was Monday morning. They're kind of poking fun at Steve Gleason, who's a guy diagnosed with ALS. And with ALS, you lose the ability to speak and move. The 790 The Zone lists the host as, and I want to say their names because they deserve to be called out on this, Nick Cellini, Steak Shapiro, and Chris Domino. But general manager Rick Mack, he didn't give the names of those who were fired. I would imagine all three of those idiots were fired, and they deserve to be fired after that. So, and it's one of those things, man. I don't know whose idea was it to even come up with this segment and poke fun at something as serious as this that has happened to Gleason. I mean, I don't know. What if you're in your right mind? I mean, I don't know how you could go through with something like this. And it shows that, you know, every day you're on the air, it could be your last day. And you have to really watch what you say and how you approach stories, something I'm mindful of. And of course, others who are in the business are mindful of all the time. And this is just one of those things that was just really idiotic, really idiotic. I mean, those guys deserve to be fired. But all right, man, let's move on. Soccer ball dribbler, Richard Swanson of Seattle. Now, this guy, if you don't know, he planned to dribble the ball, a soccer ball, for more than a year through 11 countries before reaching Sao Paulo, Brazil, where the opener of the World Cup soccer tournament will be played on June 12, 2014. Now, Swanson began his intercontinental journey in Seattle on May 1st. He was partly promoting the Berkeley, California-based One World Football Project, which donates durable blue balls to promote the game of soccer and, you know, just of living well in developing countries. Now, Richard was struck from behind by a pickup while walking south along Interstate US 101 near Lincoln City. It happened on May 14th. So now the day of his death, Swanson actually posted a video on Facebook that showed him walking along the beach, kicking the blue soccer ball. He was looking forward to everything. So the guy who hit him, Scott Van Hyatt, he was arrested Monday on a charge of criminally negligent homicide. So Hyatt was indicted by a Lincoln County grand jury last week and was jailed on $50,000 bail. So really sad stuff, though, man. That would have been quite an accomplishment if Richard got to do that. But Scott Van Hyatt has been arrested after striking Richard, which led to his death. Last story, Lolo Jones. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Lolo Jones, who's an Olympic track athlete and bobsledder now, Lolo wasn't thrilled with her check from the bobsled team. Of course, this is a new endeavor for her. She's been doing for quite some time now. But the check was for a reported the amount of $741.84, and she was not too happy about it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Vine, but Vine is kind of like video for Instagram almost, or video for Twitter. I don't know. It's like a new craze now. You post a video, whatever you're doing, and she posted a Vine video. Lolo's pretty big on it. She said, "Quote: 7 months with bobsled season." The whole season, that's it. And then she actually picks up her phone and says, "I'm going to be a little late on my rent this month." So she's not too happy with her $741 check from the bobsled team. And, you know, Olympic gold medalist Steve Holcomb said that Jones's video wasn't taken very well. He elaborated that, quote, "People were kind of insulted. You just made $741, more than most athletes in the sport. So what are you complaining about?" So, and he also goes on to say, quote, "The way it came across to a lot of athletes here was kind of snobby because she's one of the most well-known athletes in the world. And she's making pretty good money in endorsements. And to basically turn around and slap us in the face because you didn't make any money this year in bobsledding while taking money from other athletes. She slapped pretty much every athlete in the U.S. Federation in the face. That was the general consensus." So Lolo has apologized and said she didn't mean to offend anyone. And really, she meant it as a way to kind of promote why, you know, this the differential when it comes to mainstream sports in a, you know, a sport like bobsledding. So she didn't mean any offense. She just wanted to shine light on the fact that there's a huge differential pay-wise. I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny. You can go on, you know, go on her Vine page. I'm not sure what her name is on there. I'm sure you can Google it. Lolo Jones Vine bobsled check, and it'll probably pop up. So NBA Finals are also tonight. The Spurs try to close out the series to the Miami Heat in Miami. Oh, that should be fun to watch. All right, ladies and gents, we have to move on to our last segment of Current Sports. We're going to take your calls about any of the topics discussed today. 517-355-9527. Hit me up on Facebook.com/Current Sports or even tweet me a question at Al Martin WKAR. If you want to hear what's on your mind, stick around. More Current Sports is next.
The comic trio The Lonely Island has a new album, their third, with guest appearances by Lady Gaga and Justin Timberlake. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Andy Samberg and the guys behind The Lonely Island, who made music parodies on Saturday Night Live. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm Al Martin. It's that time we hear from you. That's right. Give us a call at 517-355-9527. We'll talk about anything that's on your noggin. And I do believe we have Alex from Ann Arbor on line one. What's going on, Alex?
Hey, Al, how you doing, man? Great show as always. I swear there's never a dull moment.
Thanks a lot, bud. Appreciate that, man. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to know, who do you think's going to pull out this series, the Heat or the Spurs? What are you thinking?
You know what? When you asked me that, I'm a very prideful guy, and I chose the Heat to win in six, maybe seven games, and I'm sticking with the Heat to win in six, maybe seven games. Now, I got to say that because it's still the Miami Heat. Maybe I'm stuck in this mindset that this is still the Miami Heat. They're the most – I mean, throughout the season, they've been the most elite basketball team in the world, and I just can't see them losing at home. I mean, home court advantage is so important when you talk about the NBA Finals in any sport for that matter, and the Miami Heat fans really fuel that team when they're at home, and don't get me wrong, the Spurs have been great. They have been unbelievable, but I just don't think LeBron's going to allow that to happen, at least tonight for that matter, letting the Spurs close it out on their home floor.
Okay, I think it's going to be a good series, man. I'm excited to see
it. Oh, it already is a good one, man. It's fun to watch.
It is, man. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was just the issue of gay athletes in sports. I know it's a very touchy subject, but you had a guest in on the show earlier, and I actually had a gay athlete on my football team in high school, and all I wanted to say about it was, you know, my dad raised me kind of Catholic against, you know, gays and things like that, so that's a very touchy subject for me. But when I was on a team with him, you know, it was kind of like that was just one of our teammates, you know. It wasn't really like crazy, you know. I'm not gonna lie, some kids would kind of, you know, like say certain things about it, but it wasn't as bad as like some people probably think it's gonna be, you know. Like, it's not like, oh, we got to worry about going in the locker room here, you know. I think that the word gay, like when somebody is labeled as gay, a lot of people can instantly have like a feeling against that person, you know. And I can even say that for myself, you know, sometimes when I see a person labeled as gay, just because the way I was raised, you know, it's not that bad. Like, it's not crazy. It's not as dramatic as I think some people think it is who have never been on a team with a gay athlete, you know. So
right.
I know it's a very touchy subject, but great show, Al. Always love listening to you, man, all right?
Hey, thanks a lot, Alex, for the call. Appreciate you expressing that, man. And on Barbershop Wednesday, we will definitely dive into that topic. How would you deal with a gay athlete being on your team? Would that change your perception of them? We'll really dive into that tomorrow on our on Segment C. Alex, thanks for the call. Before we run out of time, though, it is Top 5 Tuesday. And on today's Top 5 Tuesday, of course, I'm joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Luckey as we list our top 5 biggest blunders, just chokes, of all time in sports. So really quick, guys, we'll start with Matt. Go ahead, man.
All right,
biggest chokes.
I'm going to run through these as quickly as possible. Number 5, I'll never forget it, unfortunately, 2006 Michigan State Notre Dame. It was a monsoon game. The Spartans were up 17-0, 24-7, and 37-21 in the fourth quarter, and they somehow lost the game 40-37 in regulation. That was the game where Charlie Weiss claimed that, I believe it was Matt Trannon, hit him on the sidelines, and it was also probably the game that put one of the final nails in John L. Smith's coaching coffin. J.U. Colquick, 111 yards on 8 carries, and we didn't run him in the second half in the middle of a monsoon.
That's ridiculous.
I could do that.
I remember that game vividly, man.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I'm still mad about it. All right, number 4, just the playoff career of Tony Romo, whether it was 2007 when he fumbled the snap on a 19-yard field goal to lose by 1 in Seattle, or the next year where he threw a late interception to lose to the Giants. You know, it's been well documented. One of his, you know, the biggest thing is he doesn't win in the playoffs, and he is probably the most, you know, well-known, I guess, choke artist.
Tony, uh-oh.
Exactly.
That's what we call him.
Exactly.
Tony, uh-oh.
All right, number 3, Jan van de Velde, classic 1999 British Open. He needed a 6 on the par 4 18 to win.
Right.
Shot a seven. Put it in the water. Put it in a bunker. Put it in the bleachers. It was everything that could go wrong did. There's a video on YouTube where he goes back to that hole and plays the entire thing with a putter, and he scores a six. So it's like...
With a putter.
Off the tee. All right. Number two, Yankees, Red Sox, 2004 ALCS. Yanks up 3-0 in the series, leading game four in the ninth inning, and then everything changed. They get on the wrong side of, momentum, bloody sock at game six, Johnny Damon grand slam in game seven, lose 4-3. Number one, 2006 Winter Olympics, Lindsay Jacob Ellis in a snowboarding event. She has a 3-second lead in the event, second to last jump, does a trick that she didn't need to, falls,
I remember that
finishes
too.
Second, and has to settle for silver. That's number one.
That was a huge blunder, man. Ridiculous. That's a pretty good number one.
And she has to wait 4 years, or she had to wait 4 years to try and...
That's how it goes,
avenge
man.
It, and it didn't happen. So
wow, Alex, tough what break, you guys?
All
tough.
Right, I'll go quick. Uh-oh, Steve Bartman, number five, Cubs 2003 NLCS. Number four, I've got Chris Webber with the timeout. Come on, that
Ooh,
was
that's
Michigan.
A big one. Oh, wow, that's not on my list. What's wrong with me? Okay, go ahead.
Right. Oh, they're too many. They're too many.
It's too many.
Number three, yeah. I'm going to go with Vanderbilt as well at the 1999 British Open. Number two, who could forget old Billy Buckner himself with a simple ground ball that could have solidified the Sox's first. And then number one, just the impact of biting someone's ear off, Mike Tyson and Holyfield. And the funny thing is, look what happened to his career after he bit the ear off. You know, the death, the spiral, the downward spiral of Tyson.
Right.
Just that was just so it basically destroyed his career.
Yeah,
almost,
after he bit the ear. Don't bite ears. It will ruin careers.
It's a heck of a way to start a downward spiral.
I like that, though.
Bite the ear, you ruin your career.
I like that.
Oh, that's all right, guys. All right, for me, Phil Mickelson at wing foot. How can you forget that, man? You got to have him on your list. Phil was up plus three near the finish of the 2006 U.S. Open. He actually sent a ball on the 17th in the trash can. You guys remember that? In the trash can. But Phil Mickelson totally collapsed then, so he definitely made my list there. 2004, I'm a Piston fan, so I had to throw my Pistons in there. When they beat the Lakers in 2004, Lakers were stacked. Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bean Bryant, Karl Malone, Gary Payton. Okay. I mean, how could they lose? Well, the Pistons proved that fact wrong. They actually won 4-1. The Lakers won one game out of that series. The Pistons, who were known to not have any stars, and they really, really, really took that one and took a hand of that one. All right, 1994, the Seattle Sonics. If you guys remember, the Sonics were led by Gary Payton's involved twice in my list. Wow. Gary Payton, Sean Kemp, number one overall seed, 63-19 record. Chicago Bulls were gone this year. Of course, Jordan, you know, he's playing baseball. This is supposed to be Seattle's year. Then all of a sudden, these guys, the Denver Nuggets, who barely make the playoffs, they were actually the Denver Nuggets squeaked into the playoffs with a 42-40 record. They beat Seattle in six games. If you remember the famous shot of Dikembe Mutombo grabbing the ball on the floor, just screaming. I think he was crying. I can't remember. I think he was doing something. He was going nuts. He was going crazy. The first time a number eight seed had beat the number one seed in NBA playoff history. So that's up there. The 2003 Chicago Cubs. Chicago was up 3-1 on the Florida Marlins in the NLCS, ready to go to the franchise's first World Series in half a century, guys. Led by guys like Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood, Carlos Zambrano. But then the Cubs let Game 5 go, then Game 6, then Game 7, and the team really hasn't been the same since that, guys. Really, now, I mean, you can argue that they're the most collapse-prone team in American sports.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
The second anything goes wrong, the entire house of cards falls.
Exactly, man. So that was really, in 2003, I'll never forget that either. And number one, guys, the Detroit Lions in 2008 didn't win a game. They went 0-60. Not one. If they won one game, they wouldn't be on my list. But they went. Donut. That's it.
Well,
all right, this is fun. Good list.
Oh yeah,
that was a great list.
I thought when you said Lions, you were going to talk about that field goal that the Bears got into the playoffs.
Oh, I know that. That could have. Okay, I can see that too. But 0-16. Come on,
I don't
son.
Yeah.
Woo! All right, before we leave, I want to give a special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, our production assistants. Intern Mike Corey, engineer Aaron Young. Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to Rob Copeland for giving us great insight on homosexuality in the world of sports. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Same time, same place tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FMHD 3 East Lansing. Be easy, people. Thank you.